Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Heck.
Yes, the iconic voice of Esther Lynn welcomes you to a brand new edition of Between the Links. We're doing a live roundtable edition of the program, some friendly banter to discuss all the big news going on in the world of mixed martial arts. Thank you for having us on. We're hoping for the big championship battle to go down next week between Jed Meshew and Phoenix Carnevale, but lining up the schedules has proven to be very difficult, but we will get it done at some point. But I figured we can banter, keep it somewhat friendly, and have some fun on this Thursday afternoon. Speaking of Jed Meshew, he is here right now, the reigning undisputed BTL champion. Although you don't have your first title defense, Jed, you are here to talk some MMA. How are you, my friend?
I am not. We talked about this whatever week it was at this point. I am not the reigning. I am not the undisputed. Phoenix Carnevale. Again, unlike Aljamain Sterling, when I say something, I mean it. And I am not the champion until I beat Phoenix. So you can give me that paper title. I'm going to put it down, and I'm never picking it up. You're not going to find any images of me online with that belt because I'm not the real until I beat the real. At some point, that's going to happen. In the interim, happy to be here and chat with you guys. Should be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I did all this work to put this tournament together, and it means nothing? It means nothing, Jed? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No, we just haven't had the finale of the tournament yet. I beat some bozo named Alexander Lee, who I wake up and just destroy. I don't have to do anything. Be half asleep and just murder that guy. It doesn't count. The title comes when Phoenix goes down, and that's what's going to happen as soon as we do get locked in the BTL cage together. But for now, I'm an interim champion at best.
Well, hopefully next week we can settle that score once and for all. Also joining us this week is a man coming off of a big victory this past Saturday in Las Vegas. He got a late notice opponent change, got the job done against Kevin Kroom at UFC Vegas 46. Let us say hello to Mr. Brian Boom Kelleher. How are you, sir? Look at that eye.
Boom, baby. What's going on? I don't know who Phoenix is, but I'll tell you what. I'll take an illegal knee and a championship belt and some pay-per-view points on this bad boy.
Brian, congratulations on the win. And I am curious, though, and you may have shared this information elsewhere, but that damn Michael Bisping just took that microphone right away from you, and you were about to say something very compelling, it looked like. What were you going to say, Brian? Tell the folks if you would be so kind.
Unbelievable. I was going to pop his damn eyeball out, to be honest with you. But I just wanted to get on the mic and say, hey, Vegas, can I get a boom? Because I did that in Florida once when there was fans, and the arena erupted. So I was excited to do that. It wasn't too important, but hey, Bisping, he definitely played me on that.
Did you go to the bathroom before we started the show?
Everything's clean. I took a nice shower. I got ready proper for the show. Yeah, that's another story in itself. I'm surprised Bisping didn't ask me about that, but that was something I had to share with the fans just because it was my truth. It was my reality, and I had to tell it. I thought it was hilarious.
All right. Well, I guess we appreciate your candor and your openness and your honesty,
Brian.
Before the fight, man, they give you're wearing these tight ass shorts and you got the cup, everything's like, you know, so you got some gas coming in, your nerves are kicking, and I'm thinking, oh my god, I'm the second fight, you know, this fight's about to end. I'm trying to fart, and like, it's you know when it's not a fart, it's a little bit something else. So yeah. I'm thinking, I can't push, like I can't do this. I'm trying to let it out slow, just ease it out, you know, and it's not working. So, you know, I said, you know what, I got to do this because I don't have time to go to the bathroom. So I got to let this out. So I go to let it out, a little something, you know, I feel warmth and a little bit of like dampness there. And I'm in the middle of warming up with my teammates. So I got to tell them, I'm like, dude, I think I sharted, man. I gotta hit the bathroom. So, yeah, that was my story. Went to the bathroom. There was a little mark there. It wasn't too much. I wiped it up, cleaned it up. And I think Kevin Crew might have pink eye, but hey.
Who says MMA fighting doesn't give you the news you need, ladies and gentlemen? Who says that? The answer is no one.
Fighting dirty.
Dirtiest fighter there is, man.
The Ric Flair of the UFC. Wow. All right. Well, let's start with UFC Vegas 46. And there was no sharding involved in this fight, at least to our knowledge. And the way that this card ended was Calvin Kattar put on one hell of a performance against Giga Chikadze. He was a pretty sizable underdog. Most people were counting him out of this fight following that loss to Max Holloway a year or so ago. But he goes out there, as Jed Meshew likes to say, put the wood to Giga Chikadze for 25 minutes. So, Jed, we will begin with you. Did you learn more about Calvin Kattar or Giga Chikadze on Saturday night?
I mean, I guess I learned more about Giga Chikadze just because he could take a beating. Like, I just assume that most people can't take that sort of an ass whooping because it's a big one. And so at any point you could quit, you could find a way out, or your body could just turn off. And I mean, Giga lost. I think every judge had him lose every round. I gave him one of the rounds, but he lost cleanly. But he was by no means not still trying. Like, he wasn't holding on to survive. He was at points having to survive. But, I mean, he was back. He was out there throwing back, you know, giving as good as he got for portions, but just not for the balance of the fight. So, I mean, we learned certainly some about Calvin Kattar, his ability to – respond from taking his own hellacious ass beating a year ago and kind of do the things he needed to come back, reset and get back in there and then put on that performance. But I mean, I think we knew, or at least I feel like I had a good concept that Calvin Kattar had that sort of game in him. Sorry, I was getting a phone call. But I didn't know that Chikadze had that level of toughness in him. So I was really impressed by both guys.
What do you think, Brian? Did you take more away from Calvin Kattar's win or Giga Chikadze's loss?
You know, to me, I would say Calvin Kattar's win. I think a lot of people had questions about, you know, what kind of Calvin Kattar we were going to get after that Max Holloway fight. You know, he took so much damage in that fight. A lot of shots, you know, accumulated, and people worry about that, you know. And you know, he really showed his ability to adapt and make changes, not only just from that fight, but also during this fight. You know, I thought Giga looked really sharp early with the kicks. He landed a couple really hard, and then you saw Kattar make the adjustments and he closed the distance. He made it a boxing fight. He really used a lot of forward pressure to make sure that, you know, Giga was on his back foot. He could no longer really utilize that kick with the same kind of power if he's backing up constantly. So I was just really impressed during the fight with Calvin Kattar's ability to adjust and make it his fight.
We've seen some outstanding bounce back performances throughout this long run of the UFC. We've seen guys and gals come back from some tough losses, some long layoffs. Brian, but what Calvin Kattar did after the Holloway loss and taking a record number of strikes and being counted out by almost everybody in this fight, was this one of like the best bounce backs that you can recall?
Yeah, I mean, as of recent, for sure, because, you know, the beating that he took was like it was pretty one-sided, and people, you could tell in the media that it was a concern, you know, for a lot of people. But you could also see that Calvin Kattar's got a great team behind him that's smart. You know, his coach is definitely underrated, I think. And, you know, they took the time off, and a lot of people had concerns about that too, like, oh, too much time off, we don't know, how's that going to affect him? But for him, he had a good quote that I really liked. He said, like, I never got worse by, you know, taking more time to get, you know, to train, to put into the gym, to focus on this next fight. So I thought that was great. And as far as like bounce back wins, he honestly, like with that win, he pretty much erases the Holloway loss. Like, I think people are just going to remember that last fight with Giga and think, man, who's Kattar going to fight next? And where are they going to put him next? He seems to belong at the top.
In terms of what this win did for Kattar, Jed, and you were very respectful on the roundtable last week on the podcast network, talking about the sort of ceiling that you had for Calvin Kattar. And Giga talked a lot heading into the fight about title shots, Volkanovski in general, while Kattar did what Kattar and the New England cartel guys always do. They focus on the task at hand. They don't talk trash. And in this case, it paid off huge because all the talking Giga did had Kattar coming out smelling like absolute roses. I know this all depends on the result of Volkanovski zombie, how long Holloway will be sidelined for with this injury, and who knows? Kattar could end up as the backup for the title fight in April. Has your stance changed on Kattar being in the title picture and how close he is to that shot now as opposed to last week?
No, and that's kind of goes back to the, I think I learned more about Giga. I think less of Giga than I did coming into the fight. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, though. There's no way, I guess, to take the way I just said that other than disrespectful. I thought Giga had the basic level of talent to maybe be a future title contender. I kind of don't think that anymore. I think Kattar just sort of showed the deficiencies, and Giga, while young in MMA, is probably too old to really make some big changes in the time that would be necessary for him to put a concerted title run together. For Kattar, it's really the same thing that I said last week. Like, I think Calvin Kattar is one of those guys who we are destined to not respect enough for what he has accomplished and what he's able to accomplish. I think that there's a really strong argument that guys like him or Michael Bisping or Martin Campman, like those guys who absolutely maximize their tools, like, to me, that's one of the hardest things you can do in life, and certainly in this sport, is getting every inch out of the tools God gave you. And I think Calvin Kattar is certainly doing that. But I think fundamentally God didn't give him enough tools to really grab that brass ring. And so I feel sort of the same. He is going to be a top five guy, and he can beat a lot of really good fighters. I think he's going to struggle to consistently put together wins over top eight opposition that would get him to a title fight. So if he gets one, it would be a matter of timing, or less than, yeah, he's undeniable. Because, I mean, I think to some extent Brian's right. Like, people are going to start to forget about the Max fight because this was such a dominant showing from him. But at the same time, he also still ate a ton of shots in this fight. I know we aren't talking about it, but he ate more shots in this fight than he ate in any other fight of his career other than the Holloway fight. And that's going to leave a mark and be rough moving forward. But also, just like, we know what the top is at featherweight. It's Max and Volk. And he clearly is not getting to Max. Like, that is not a gap that I think he can overcome based on how dominant that fight was. So I just don't see it for him. If he does, great. It would be a good win for Volkanovski or Holloway again. Cause like I said, he's a top eight, top five guy, but I just don't think I would not bet on him getting a title shot before his career is done.
What do you think, Brian? Because we don't know how long Holloway is going to be out for. He could be out for 2 months. He could be out for a year. We have no idea. We don't know the extent of the injury. So let's just say it's the latter. Let's say Holloway doesn't fight at all this year. Calvin Kattar could be next in line for the title. Like, he could get the winner of Volkanovski and Zombie easy with his resume. Like, if you compare the two resumes between him and Zombie, they're pretty damn close. So if you had to guess, if I gave you $20 and said, hey, Brian, take this $20, you got to put it on whether or not Kattar gets a title shot in 2022. Where are you putting it?
You know, I think, like you said, with the different factors that play into this, you know, with injuries and stuff like that, there is a lot of luck that comes into play. And I think, you know, Jed's right. I think if Calvin Kattar has to go through Max again to get to that point, I don't think he has great odds to become champion. But, you know, that's also another thing. You know, you never know how this plays out, because how long is Max out? You know, can Calvin Kattar slip in at some point? You know, Zombie versus Volkanovski, what happens there? You know, imagine, you know, Zombie wins. That mixes up everything. You know, we don't know what's going to happen from there. And then if Max comes back and ends up champion, that's like a rematch that you can make down the line and a big story you could tell about, you know, Kattar's made changes, but he was dominated completely against this guy the first time out. So I think there's a lot of variables that come into play. And honestly, from that last fight, I did see like a different fighter in Calvin Kattar, you know, with a lot of new tools that he added to his game. Those elbows were amazing. He landed a couple of real sharp spinning elbows. And I think that, you know, he mixed in a couple of takedowns and they seemed a little bit more of a desperate thing, but hey, he has them there now, you know? So, you know, mixing up the game is very important. You can't just be one-dimensional, go in and try to box someone and that's it. So I think if he can keep improving and adding to his game and somehow slip in, maybe something happens. You never know, man. I mean, look, Zombie just got an opportunity, right? So things can happen and he could slip in if he keeps winning.
It's a featherweight's interesting right now. Obviously, Volkanovski Holloway is the fight everybody wants to see. But again, we don't know how long Holloway's going to be out for. Kattar versus Yair would be a lot of fun. Kattar versus Ortega would be very interesting. Giga takes a step back. What do you mean? You don't like that, Jen?
You can put Kattar in against a broom. It's going to be fun. Dude is a banger of an action fighter. Like, I got nothing but respect for Calvin Kattar. I don't think he wins against Yair, and I think he probably doesn't win against a lot of the other. Like, that's the other thing about featherweight, too. We talked about it last week. Like, it has so much emerging talent that is about to start coming on. And Kattar, who's kind of had a shot at least against 1B at the top of the thing, like, he's not going to be next up. He's going to either have to fight Yair, which is a fight that I don't think is great for him, or he's going to have to fight, like, Josh Emmett or something. And I just don't feel great about it. But you could put him in against any human being on the planet. It's going to be fun as hell to watch.
Agreed. Great performance. I spoke with Calvin on We Got Next. You can find that on the podcast network. I manned up. I told him that I picked against him, and he took it in stride and he handled it like a pro. So good for him.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that health care is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Let's talk about another individual who has found himself in this Volkanovski featherweight title discussion over the last couple of weeks. That is one Henry Cejudo, who has found himself in the middle of a lot of storylines these days. But when the news of Max Holloway's injury came about, Cejudo raises his hand and does the Cejudo thing, takes shots at Volkanovski. But then over this last week, he sort of turned his attention not on Volkanovski, but to Dana White and the UFC, after getting passed over for the Korean Zombie, who, oddly enough, is a member of the Fight Ready squad and will be training with Henry Cejudo to prepare for this title fight. But Cejudo has had things to say about the UFC and Dana White. Dana White, in turn, as he typically does, has had things to say about Henry Cejudo and being retired and it being silly for him to just jump the queue. So, Ryan, outside looking in, this was a story heading into your fight, obviously. What have you made of this whole situation, this Dana White versus Henry Cejudo battle?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Cejudo is actually, he's kind of a funny guy, like with his shit talk, you know, and it's interesting. And he does say a lot of the right things. But at the same time, like, you know, Dana White's not going to bite for someone who is not like real superstar power. You know, the whole comparison to GSP, it makes sense as far as like a rational thing. Like, oh, you let him come back and challenge, you know, Bisping for the title at a different weight class. And look, he just up and left. And, you know, that's the thing is that was a mistake looking back for the UFC. They kind of don't want to do that again. They don't want you coming in, winning a title and then just bouncing and leaving it, you know, empty handed and them having to figure out the division. So I think that's a big part of it. And then on top of it, you know, Cejudo wants to get paid. He wants to get paid like what, you know, he believes he deserves, which yes, he, you know, Olympic champion, he has all the accolades and, you know, it would make rational sense for him to get a chance for what he's done in the sport. But his star power, it's not matching up with the UFC. And I think that's what the big difference is.
Jed, your thoughts on this, because Cejudo wants to go out there and make history and become a three division champion. However, the man upped and retired. He kind of left the UFC high and dry after he stopped Dominic Cruz. A lot of eyeballs were on that whole card and that whole situation because this is the first sporting event back. It was UFC 249. We're trying to get sports moving forward. What else are we going to watch? Let's order this pay-per-view. And Henry Cejudo goes out there and bolts Dominic Cruz and gets the stoppage win. And then he just ups and retires, him wanting more money and all. So Dana, like Brian said, he's a little weary because when you get burnt once, you might get burnt again. At the same time, Cejudo's won titles in two different divisions. And although, like Brian said, he's not as big of a pay-per-view draw as he probably thinks he is, outside of Holloway, this was probably the biggest featherweight title fight the UFC could make here, with Cejudo looking to make some history and the storylines attached to it. What have you made of how both Cejudo and Dana White have handled this whole thing?
Man, I have a lot of thoughts. Most of them are mean. So I'm just going to say them. You know me, Mike, I am not a man who sides with Dana White on damn near anything because he's just wrong about damn near everything. He's totally correct in this situation. Well, almost totally correct. He's correct in the things he said are dumb and objectively untrue. So when Dana came out and was like, no, you know, like, nobody gets to do this. You don't get to come out of retirement and then jump up a weight class. Like, that's objectively false. They did it for GSP. So the way he said it was very stupid because there's a much easier way to say it. Because what he actually means is nobody gives a shit because nobody does. I think Henry Cejudo is an incredible fighter. He is a two division champion and a former Olympic gold medalist. I will be in super frank and say I believe being a former gold medalist is more impressive than being a two-division champion in the UFC. Like, that is an incredible accomplishment, especially he did it at 18 years old. I have nothing to speak against his fighting prowess. I do think that, like Brian said, he says a lot of the right things, but he doesn't quite. And I'm trying to figure out how it works because it's like he knows what he's supposed to say and he says it, but just doesn't get it quite right at the end. So it botches everything. Because if he wanted to fight this fight, if he really did want to fight a featherweight title fight, he could get one. He can't get one immediately. And that's kind of where the disconnect is here because he is not a star. Nobody genuinely cares. You know this because to me, it is pretty obvious that his retirement was a contract ploy that didn't go his way. And then when the UFC called his bluff, he just kind of went with it because it was pretty obvious immediately after he retired. He was like, yeah, you know, I'm retired, but I don't make enough money. And if Dana knows the number to bring me back. And so that really reads strongly to me as, yeah, I just want more money because we've seen Conor McGregor do that before. We've seen Nate Diaz threaten this sort of thing. Like, it's Jon Jones threatened to walk away until he got more money. I think he overplayed. He thought he was more important because he thought that having two belts meant he mattered, but it doesn't, because the UFC does not really care about their champions, only slightly above the rest of their fighters. And now he's just sort of down this road. If he really wanted to get this fight, he could very easily do it by just saying, hey, Dana, I want to come back. I don't care about the bantamweight belt. I would like to try and make history, be the first three-division champion. You're not going to give me a title fight? Okay, what's Brian Ortega doing? Let me fight Brian Ortega. He comes back, he beats Brian Ortega, he gets a title fight. That's just it. But I don't think he wants to do that. Not because he's afraid of Brian Ortega. I think he only wants this fight if it's just going to be really convenient for him. If all he has to do is tweet out, hey, I want to do this, and they're like, let's do it, sure. And we're going to give you a big bag of money on top of it. But that's not how it was ever going to work. And he knows that that's not how it's ever going to work. So I mostly feel like this is posturing from him. Because also, he's not in the USADA pool. He never could have fought in March. He has to come back for 6 months. Technically, the UFC can give him an exemption, but they're not going to. So I feel like this has mostly just been posturing from him. And unless the stars align, he's not going to get this chance. And so he's just not going to fight again, which is fine. It'd just be a lot cooler if he wasn't lame about it on Twitter.
So Jed, let's say the UFC was like, all right, dude, you want this? We're going to give it to you. Here's your exemption. Let's see what people want. All right. Let's survey the people. Are you would you be personally more interested in the zombie fight or Cejudo going for the third title? Like, if we're up to you, if Dana White called you on the phone and said, which fight would you rather pick? I know you're a zombie fan. I get that. And you want to see it in that way. But your thoughts overall, outside of being wanting to see zombie get a shot.
Outside of wanting to see zombie get a shot, for sure, I'd rather see Cejudo. I think Cejudo is the more objectively interesting fight just because it would present such a rare opportunity. The first person to win three belts in the UFC, even if I would say that that's a little sus about that, but still an incredible accomplishment. Frankly, we already talked about this. I don't really think Zombie super deserves a featherweight title shot here either. So neither guy would really deserve the title fight. I think Zombie's going to do way better numbers than Cejudo would. But from kind of all of those, journalistic storylines, it's certainly much more interesting for Cejudo to try and make history.
What do you think, Brian? Are you more Volkanovski Cejudo or more Volkanovski Zombie here with Holloway not in the picture at the moment?
I'd be more into the Cejudo thing. I just think there's a little bit more interest for me, as a fighter, just to see history like that and see if he could do it. He's a smaller guy. He's fought at flyweight and then bantamweight, and he's, he has all the tools though to beat anybody that's in front of him, really, with his wrestling background and all that. So, much improved striking as the years went on. I'd be interested stylistically to see that fight and just to see, can Henry Cejudo really come in and do that? It's just the whole retirement factor doesn't help you in negotiations. And I think that that's where he's at right now. He's trying to flex on the UFC. And whenever you do that, it just never ends up good for you.
Yeah, the timing of the retirement was terrible.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Unless you
terrible
really timing. Make a difference,
Dude, the timing was so bad because you immediately – Dana in the post-fight was like, yeah, Piotr Jan will fight for the belt. That's fine. Remember, it took him 6 months to admit Khabib, who obviously was legitimately retiring, was going to retire because his dad died. I was like, no, we're going to get him back here. So Cejudo was like, yeah, I'm out. He's like, that's fine. See ya. Don't let the door hit you on the way. Done.
Yeah, tune into ABC. We'll give you an update on Khabib's status. It was just so silly, that whole thing. So we'll round it off with this. Is there a world, Jed Meshew, where Henry Cejudo, Dana White, and the UFC can find some sort of common ground? Maybe we see Triple C fight again inside the octagon. Do you think he fights again, simply put?
No. Unless he gets bills. And, he's about to have a kid. Bills do pile up when you have a kid. But they're not going to give him a featherweight title shot, straight up. If he wants to come back for a bantamweight one, but I think that presents super high risk and low reward. So unless he changes his mind about the money he wants, they're not giving him one, because the UFC sure isn't doing that.
What do you think, Boom? Do you think we see Cejudo fight again? Maybe not. I mean, maybe this year, maybe not. But do you see him? Do you think there's a world we see him actually fight in the UFC again ever?
I kind of lean towards no also. You know, I think like – I don't think they're going to jump for the amount of money that he wants unless they really desperately needed him. And it just doesn't seem like that would ever play out. Like maybe if, you know, Zombie, Cater, you know, all those top guys behind Volkanovski get hurt all at the same time and they want to make some kind of super fight to fill in the gap. Like that would be the only way that I think they would like jump for like a higher number for him. But otherwise – I just don't see him even wanting to come back to bantamweight unless it was for that number as well. You know, he's already made the history there. Like he has no reason to do that. He just wants to make more history and get that third title. So I feel like it's 45 or bust. And I don't see the UFC biting.
Yeah. Cejudo overshot in such a big way. He was like the guy in Along Came Polly playing basketball, just Jumanji and throwing the ball over the hoop. He missed every shot he took here. Like A for effort, absolutely A for effort. But the UFC clearly does not appreciate being made a fool of, especially on a card like that. And what's awful, what hurts Cejudo as well is that the two divisions he represented have both clearly moved on without him. The flyweight division too. A lot of people thought Cejudo saved the flyweight division. Yeah, there's some semblance of truth to that, but Figueiredo going out there and finishing people, that helped the division. Brandon Moreno's incredible moment in June, that helped the division. Both divisions are doing just fine without Henry Cejudo, so he doesn't have a lot of weight to this whole
Let's
thing.
Let's be
so
clear.
We'll see what happens.
Let's be clear, Mike. They're not doing just fine. They are in better shape than when Henry Cejudo was the champion of them. Like entirely legitimately, the Brandon Moreno Davidson Figueiredo trilogy has been awesome, and either way you're getting a, in my personal opinion, a much more interesting champion, and certainly somebody who is at least committed to actually being the champion of that division. And at 135, like Piotr Jan and Aljo, there's a lot of heat on that, and that division is just shit. Brian knows that division's fire. So, like, way better shape than when he was there trying to fight Dominic Cruz and old people because he was doing legacy stuff and not really concerned with being the actual top guy in the division.
To more pressing matters, gentlemen, because we have the UFC's first pay-per-view of the new year. This Saturday, UFC 270, the media day went down yesterday. Press conference goes down 8 p.m. Eastern today, which you can watch on MMAfighting.com. We got the two title fights. Main event, tons of storylines here, gentlemen. Francis Ngannou versus Ciryl Gane for the heavyweight title. We have the, for a short time anyway, former teammates, both guys finding success at the MMA factory out of Paris, France.
They were never teammates. They were never friends.
That's right. But they trained together like six total times. But Ngannou moves to Vegas, becomes heavyweight champ. Gane looking to become the undisputed champ in his own right. So we have the coach, the teammate thing, kind of. We have sparring footage stuff. We got Ngannou's contract situation, his issues with the UFC. Just a lot to digest here, especially from the Ngannou side. So, Jed, I'll start with you. Ngannou clearly has a lot on his mind heading into this fight. The bettors have seemed to notice this because the betting line is flipped. Gane is now the favorite. That number continues to rise. But Ngannou is still the most terrifying fighter probably in UFC history. And he looked like he was a pit bull ready to jump off his leash at media day yesterday. Do you personally, as a fight fan and as a respected journalist in this field, do you have concerns that the storylines heading into this fight could have Ngannou a bit distracted heading into Saturday?
No, I don't think he's distracted. I just don't think he's going to win. I don't think distraction has anything to do with it. The way he has carried himself and acted basically since the fight was announced has really smelled strongly to me. Like he knows he's in for an ass whooping, and he's in the same way Ronda Rousey used to do that, like posturing like all the time. And she did it all the way up into Holly Holm fight and then was embarrassed in that fight. I'm getting a lot of really similar vibes here. They've trained together. I think he just knows, like, you can't count Ngannou out. He's the most powerful puncher we've probably ever seen in this sport. if he lands, he can put anyone out. He has, you know, more than a puncher's chance. But I think this is a terrible fight for him, and I think he knows it. And I think that is, I don't know, people don't usually say the, we weren't friends, I never liked you anyway, unless, like, you were friends and you're hurt, or you, like, are in a, you're in a vulnerable position. I just feel like he knows he's about to get his ass beat, and he's saying things because that's what you're supposed to say, but it's all a false confidence, and he's going to get his ass beat.
Brian, what do you think? Do you think there's merit to these concerns for Ngannou? Do you believe it may be a bit overblown? And let me ask you as a fighter as well. Let's just say you were getting ready to fight a former teammate and sparring footage leaked. And then at the media day, the guy you're about to fight is like, well, there's some things that weren't shown in the sparring footage, including me knocking this dude out with a head kick. Is it like, what do you think of that whole thing? And is there merit to all these other concerns for Ngannou?
Well, I'll say this. I think Jed's probably right, but I'll bring a different perspective. I think that, you know, with all of this stuff that is going on with Ngannou and the leaked footage and all that stuff, there's a lot of, you know, personal feelings, I think, from Ngannou inside him that, you know, it's giving him a chip on his shoulder. It could, at least, and it could light a fire under you that, you know, you're kind of embarrassed. Like, there's some footage out there. It looks like you're getting touched up by this guy, and maybe you were, and maybe you have this thought, you know, I'm about to go in there and this guy is another level. I've been in the gym with him and this is how he feels. And I'm aware of that. It's hard to get past him and land my shots or whatnot. But that could also really motivate you and really inspire you to go in and get the job done, because, you know, you opened up to this guy's coach, who was your former coach, and you gave him, you know, information about yourself and just, you know, built a relationship with somebody. And then they're kind of, you know, on the flip side, and they went and, you know, went to somebody else. And now you're facing that guy that, you know, you knew in the past and had trained with. So there is a lot to this story. And I think that it's possible that it could have lit a fire under Ngannou to try to kind of, you know, say, listen, you think one thing and you, you know, you might have got one up on me in training, but this is different. And it is, because, man, I've had the shittiest of sparring sessions before some of my best performances. And that right there just goes to show that if you connect yourself to how training went always, then you can bring some negative vibes into a fight. You have to be able to disconnect from, you know, how training went and what, you know, how'd you feel last week in the peak of your camp? How did it go? You know, sometimes you have the worst training camp and you end up having the best performance in the fight because you got it up here. And everything's together and in order mentally and psychologically. And hopefully that's the case for Francis, because I do have concerns that a lot of this is getting to him and that he might be overthinking things, and not just with the coach and the leaked footage, but with the UFC dispute and him wanting more money and this and that. It could all be adding up and be in the back of his head. So I do have those concerns as well.
Jed, if this fight goes the way that you seem, at least the way I perceive that you think it's going to go, that Gon's going to win and become the champion. We all know about Ngannou's contract. And if he loses, he can test free agency. If he wins, he's still got that champion's clause and we'll probably have to stick with the UFC for the end of the year. If this fight ends the way you think it's going to end, do you feel like this is the last time we see Ngannou in the UFC? Or do you think cooler heads will prevail, win or lose?
Maybe not the last time. I do just want to say very briefly, I hate that this storyline of the teammates is like so to the front, because I think it's a pretty fake one. Both men have said, yeah, we weren't really like that close. We've spent some time training, but you shouldn't take too much from that. But it has become this thing because of the coaches, when I think this fight just rules on the merits. Like, these are, I think, the two best heavyweights in the world. So this fight is awesome. Like, and I don't need this sort of puffed up extracurricular stuff to make me stoked about Saturday. Like, I'm just ready for this anyway. But back to your original question, Mike, I just wanted to say that. I think he could come back. I don't think he re-signs with the UFC after he loses Saturday. I think he, nor should he. Frankly, it is honestly probably a better business decision for him to lose to Gon on Saturday, because that will effectively terminate his UFC contract. And if he doesn't go out there and like look awful and get knocked out immediately, even if he's coming off a loss, I think there's still a lot of interest in doing some of those bigger boxing fights. You know, there shouldn't be. Nobody should give a shit to watch him box Tyson Fury because Tyson Fury is going to murder him. But there is. People care enough about it. He has a mystique to him. Coming off a loss maybe dulls that a little bit. But if he could find a way to just invite Ciryl Gane to take him down and then submit him, that's ideal. Because then he gets out of his UFC contract, and then he can go make a shitload of money boxing, however many of those he can line up. And then when that's over, he can always come back to the UFC. They'll re-sign him at this point. But I think it's pretty obvious that they're not going to cater to his wishes of having an option to go box if he wins or do any of those things. They're just going to ride out his champion's clause if he wins and keep him hooked for as long as they are able, because that's what this organization has done for the last 20 years. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where I sit on it. It would be better for him to lose in some ways. And when he does lose, I think he's going to pursue some of those other opportunities. But he may well find his way back to the UFC eventually.
So to sort of play devil's advocate, because Jed does make a lot of good points, and I do completely agree that this teammate thing being the promotional storyline is silly, because the real storyline is the contract. And the UFC is not going to promote that. Dana mentioned it like a couple of times, but they're not going to like – they're not going to put in the promotional video Ngannou going on the MMA hour and talking about his contract situation. It's just not going to happen. But the media, obviously, and I'll agree with Ariel on this because I know we talked about this yesterday, we're selling the fight better than the UFC is, the media is, because we're talking about the contract situation, because that is a very interesting thing here. So Jed is saying, Brian, that a loss for Ngannou opens the doors for more money and bigger opportunities. And there's some truth to that. A boxing fight with Tyson Fury, as silly as it might sound, would do bonkers box office. However, I think Francis's biggest issue, and if you listen to the Helwani interview back earlier last year, when he talks about just wanting respect from the UFC, money is part of it, but he wants to feel like the UFC is behind him, that they're promoting him, that they're pushing him. Would a win actually be better for him? Because what could be looming next? John Jones. And if Francis Ngannou beats Ciryl Gane, everyone is going to want that fight. Everyone's wanted that fight for 18 months, but everybody will want it more than ever. And John Jones has already said he's talking about it. So would it almost be better from a promotional stance if he goes out there and wins? Because the UFC is going to probably have to do whatever they can to make this fight happen, because I don't think anyone's going to be hankering to see Ngannou Stipe 3 here, are they?
Yeah, so that's a great point. I was thinking more on the lines of what Jeb was saying before, like about how, you know, if he lost, you know, he has opened the door now to, you know, go into boxing and make some really big paydays. And, you know, he mentions the boxing and stuff. So it's definitely something that's in the back of his head, which could also be a mental distraction, you know, going into this fight. Because imagine thinking to yourself, oh, wait, you know, if I lose, you know, and they release me, I'm free and I can go pursue things for the money that I think I deserve. So that's kind of a crazy thought. But if you go into the John Jones route, I mean, man, if he wins the fight, he puts himself in a position, or at least the best position, to negotiate for what he does want and to get the company behind him to the point where he feels respected. Because, man, if he's going up against John Jones, imagine like they go to Africa or something crazy. Like, they're going to get behind this guy. They have to at that point and really build that fight. And, you know, that's going to be probably one of the biggest fights in UFC history if that happens like that. So he puts himself in a really good position if he wins, and he can play his cards right and kind of respectfully meet with Dana and tell him how he feels and say, listen, I'm about to fight John Jones. I want this. Let's do this. I think the UFC might actually budge, because that's the only fight and that's the fight that they would have to make at that point.
What do you think about that, Jed? Because, I mean, John Jones fighting Ciryl Gane is interesting as well, but John Jones fighting Francis Ngannou, I mean, clearly, if you go out and ask any MMA fan what fight we have to see in 2022, list five, pretty much all of them are going to say Francis Ngannou versus John Jones. So how much does that factor in? And on the flip side, I feel like Ciryl Gane's playing with house money here. Like, yeah, it will suck if you lose to Francis Ngannou after all the talk and all the storylines, but he's only 31. He's still very new to the sport, and it's not like this is going to be his only chance to fight for the title. So your thoughts on that and just the Jones factor, and if Francis can use that to kind of parlay that into the respect that he wants?
I don't think the Jones factor matters at all. I'm extremely confident in when I say that. For one very simple reason. The UFC has essentially told us that it does not matter because, yeah, people have only wanted that fight. People have only wanted that fight for like 2 years. At the moment that Francis Ngannou knocked out Stipe Miocic, that was the fight. Nobody gave two turds about Ciryl Gane fighting Francis Ngannou. The UFC did it because this whole contract thing, because both Ngannou and Jones were like, we want to do this. We want you to pay us more because that's a reasonable request. And they were like, nope, not going to do it. And because we hold all the cards here, we're going to make an interim belt. And now you have to fight Ciryl Gane instead. Like, they didn't do that to help Francis Ngannou. They did that specifically to hurt him. Yes, the UFC should. They should have already done it. But if he wins, they should immediately make the Jones fight. I have no trust or belief or faith that they will do so. Because John Jones and Francis Ngannou both have some level of principle. And they want more money because they deserve more money. And that fight will generate an enormous amount of money. Doing it under their current contracts with the current stipulations at whatever their pay rate is – I won't say it's unfair because they did sign onto it, but it's sort of ridiculous for the UFC to kind of hold that line as ferociously as they are. And I think that that's just the same thing. Like, if the UFC wanted to make John Jones and Ngannou, they'd already done it. They're interested in the same way that Henry Cejudo is interested in a featherweight title fight. If it comes to him without issue or effort, he will take it. That is how the UFC feels about that fight. Yes, it'd be huge. Yes, they'd love it to happen, but not if they're going to have to pay one penny more than they are already currently contractually able to get from that fight. I just don't see it happening. So, I mean, and to that other point, like, if he beats Gane, I don't think the UFC is going to get behind him. The UFC historically gets behind fighters who play ball. Like, Who is Dana White's most favorite fighter of all time? It's Ronda Rousey, because Ronda Rousey made a shitload of money and never complained about anything ever. She just said, "Yeah, let's do it," and that's the people that he gets behind. He, like, that is how the UFC structures. So they're not going to support Francis Ngannou as long as he wants things for himself. That's just not how it works.
Imagine Ngannou won and then the UFC made like another interim title fight with like Stipe and someone else.
I think Stipe, that's legitimately very possible.
Yeah.
That is an incredibly possible outcome because he's going to win and be like, hey, I want to renegotiate. And they're like, champions clause, dude, we're not going to renegotiate. We're just going to re-up you because you still have the belt. Well, I'm not going to fight then. Okay, we'll make a new champion for it. They're just, yeah. That's just how this works. When, if they were better at this, if he won, holy, can you imagine how much money could be generated? If he beats Gane and then they do Jones and he beats Jones, how big would a Tyson Fury Ngannou fight at that point be? And Ngannou has said specifically, he's been like, I don't want to do this. I want the UFC to make accommodations for me to box. And I want them to be involved because I think that'll make it a bigger production. It'll be better promotion. He wants to wrap them in, and they don't care because they are so one track. And it's infuriating that they aren't good at promoting because that's ostensibly what they're supposed to do.
And Francis Ngannou is the easiest guy to promote. All you have to do is show videos of him knocking dudes out. He doesn't even have to say anything. That's all you need to do is show videos of him knocking out Alistair Overeem over and over and over again, and people will pay money to watch him fight.
Yeah, like, they have such a clear path to doing a really cool thing, making awesome fights, which Dana White has said over and over again, that's what they do. They make the fights fans want to see. And maybe making an enormous crossover boxing match that, again, is stupid. Tyson Fury will wax him. But people would turn in droves to watch that fight. It would be unbelievable numbers of people interested in that bout. And we're probably not going to get it because we're probably going to get Stipe versus John Jones as an interim title fight or some dumb shit like that. So frustrating.
So if you're the UFC and the heavy hitters, Hunter Campbell and so forth and so on, you're hoping Ciryl Gane wins because he'll play ball and fight John Jones more for legacy than the paycheck.
And he's going to win. He's going to beat the hell out of Francis Ngannou. Just sucks. Things could be so much cooler. Dare to dream.
That's, Touche.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out. Yep. Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Oh, thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAQ.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
And you, do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, let's talk about the co-main event. Let's talk about the flyweight title. Brandon Moreno, Davison Figueiredo, trilogy fight. Third straight time we're seeing this title fight. First fight was a classic, ends in a draw. Second fight, one-way traffic with Moreno, gets the finish. Figgy goes and works with Henry Cejudo at Fight Ready, and it's been a whole Moreno is a traitor. I got to get this one for the Gipper mentality from the Figgy Small side of things. So, Brian, just your thoughts outside of storylines on the fight between Moreno and Figueiredo, seeing this for the third time, the UFC going right back to this well.
Yeah, I mean, no, the fight's amazing. I mean, the first fight was great, really close. They had the draw. And then, you know, the second fight, Moreno came out and really put a stamp on it and put him away and submitted him and looked really sharp doing so. And I think, you know, Figueiredo has kind of shown a lot of, like, excuses about things previously and why he lost. And, you know, he's trying everything he can. I mean, to go train over there with Cejudo, I think it's a great idea. You know, Cejudo does seem to be a good coach, as well as a fighter, but it seems like he's smart, you know, with game plans, and that whole team is over there. So I think that's a smart move, you know, because Figueiredo is just known to be kind of an emotional fighter, and he goes in there and just throws a lot of power into every shot. And if you don't put a guy away and you think you're going to put a guy away, that could really drain you. And I think that kind of happened in the first fight a little bit, but he stayed there. And then the second fight, Moreno kind of had reads on him. And I just think Moreno kind of has his number right now. You know, I think he now knows that he can grapple with him. He could submit him. And, you know, the striking is very even. You know, Moreno throws a little bit more volume. Figueiredo has a little bit more power. But I think Figueiredo really is going to have to come into this fight a different style. You know, really be patient. Try to fight a little bit less aggressive and maybe a little bit more smart. And I think if, you know, Cejudo could talk that into him over this camp and kind of show him how to mix things up a little bit better, keep Moreno guessing, it could help him out. But I lean towards Moreno. I think he has his number right now. He's figured him out. And I think he has all the confidence in the world right now.
Jed, I feel like with the whole heavyweight title story and everything, all eyes are on that and the different things. There's an argument to be made that maybe Figgy might be a little distracted with this whole Cejudo storyline, needing to get this one back. Could be his last fight at 125. I mean, if you follow Figueiredo on Instagram, the dude looks absolutely shredded, best shape of his career. But it doesn't matter. You're 34 years old. Father time catches up to everybody. And ask Cody Garbrandt. Like, he looked healthy. But that cut to 25 does something to you. It really does, because he's a big dude for this division, always has been. It's definitely a struggle. Having said that, and just the matchup itself, do you see this fight going any differently than the one from this past June?
No, I agree with a lot of what Brian said. The only wrinkle that interests me is I am interested in Figueiredo at, you know, at Fight Ready with Cejudo, because he has the tools to be more competitive than the rematch, certainly. But to me, this is a really clear fight. I'm always willing to say I could be wrong, because what do I know, dude? But to me, this is there. I mean, you watch the sport long enough, you see trends, and this really looks to be that same trend of, here, Figgy Smalls was on top. He's getting older. He's falling off. And we have just seen Brandon Moreno blossom before our eyes to become the best flyweight in the world. And, you know, you said father time comes for everybody. And it's really hard, especially in the lighter weight classes, to kind of stave that off. And especially for a guy like Figueiredo, who is a really fun and enjoyable fighter to watch, but he has exploitable weaknesses. Namely, his grappling's never been like a super strength of his, but his game is entirely built around that power and just his raw physicality in a lot of ways over the other guys in that division. And as that starts to fall off, it's really hard. It's Figueiredo did not rise to the top by being some unbelievable technician. And so he can stave off Father Time longer than most because he just has all these skills. Like a guy like Jose Aldo, who is one of the most technically brilliant fighters we've ever seen. He's well past his prime and yet may damn well get a title fight this year at a division lower than he spent most of his career because he's just so talented. He can find ways to work around it. I don't think Figgy Smalls can really do that as well. He's 34, he's dropping off. And I think, honestly, the biggest thing to me, I think the defining feature between fight one and fight two is Moreno spent 25 minutes with him and was like, oh, that dude can punch me in the face and it won't knock me out. I can't afford to exchange with him on the feet, not be, you know, I don't need to be reckless, but I don't have to be afraid of this guy who knocks everybody out. I can do that. I can scrap with him and I can fight my fight the whole way. And so he came in and that's why we saw him basically beat Figgy pillar to post in the rematch. And I think it's the same thing. He knows that Figueiredo, who is overly reliant on his power in a lot of ways, you know, he always has the chance to hurt him, but it's not a given. He can eat those shots and stand up to it. And he can put a pace on Figueiredo, who cuts a lot of weight, and make life hard for him. I think the Cejudo thing is going to mean Figueiredo lasts longer than the third round. I think he'll make it into the championship rounds, but I still think Moreno is just a better guy at this point.
Yeah, tomorrow is going to be really interesting when he steps on the scale. See how he looks. If he's in there first and he's fresh and he's got all that energy, yeah, that's a big victory for him. It's going to be interesting. But if he comes in looking like he did in the second fight, just looking like hot garbage and just looking depleted, that's going to be very telling. Running out of time. Jed, I know you wanted to talk about this. This is the first fight card under the price increase for pay-per-views for the Ultimate Fighting Championship. $74.99. And the two title fights are really good, Jed. The rest, some interesting fights. But, I mean, and we got to factor in Adesanya Whitaker 2 and UFC 271 going down in less than a month. So now you're trying to get these fans to spend money on both of these cards. What do you think of the card as a whole? And is this a card, Jed, that you're telling people that they should stay home, watch from start to finish, and by the way, pay $75 for the last five fights?
No, this is, I think Casey said it before we filmed, this is a classic boxing card. This card's garbage, man. Like, no disrespect to the fighters on it. Some of you are very interesting and compelling fighters. And some of these fights, especially in the undercard, are interesting for one reason or another. But this is not – they're outside of the top two things, there is not really anybody on this card that somebody who is not deeply ingrained in the sport of MMA will have even heard of. I mean, there is a guy named Nurmagomedov, but it's not the one that the people will think if you just ask – if you take a poll of people at a B-dubs, they're not gonna be like, I know who Saeed Nurmagomedov is. Like, is he related to Habib? I know that one. So it's just this is a two fight card. I still would recommend you pay the 75 because I think the main event is that compelling and that important of a fight. It is for the baddest man on the planet and the two best heavyweights in the world going at it. I think Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo, I mean, their first fight was one of the fights of the year. Their second fight was fun, even if it was more one-way traffic. Those are enough to make me say you should buy it. The $75 price point is stupid. I don't know the validity of Dana White saying the UFC doesn't have any sway over that determining factor. Because Dana said it, I'm going to assume it's not true. But I can tell, like, it could be true. He said true things before, just he doesn't make a habit out of it. So either way, it's ridiculous. Somebody on Twitter was like, yeah, the price of inflation is not near the cost expense here. It's risen $20 in 3 years or something dumb. Like, this is the part of the sport that hurts me, is knowing that the UFC doesn't even pretend to care about its fans. Like, they're coming off of two of their most successful years of all time. They have said that repeatedly, despite there being a global pandemic going on. And despite that, they have neither raised pay for fighters or given them an equitable share of the earnings that they should have. And those profits also haven't trickled down to the fans with decreased card costs. Like, it's just, they're just going to milk us for everything and keep paying off. Pay off that ticket, man. WME spent $4 billion to acquire it. They got to pay that down. And it's not coming out of their pockets, so it's coming out of ours.
Brian, I know you fight for the UFC, so we're not going to talk about the price increase. But just you're a fight fan too. You're a student of the game. So your thoughts on this card as a whole?
No, I mean, I think this card as a whole, like, it doesn't have the most depth to it. But like he was saying, more of like a boxing style where it's like that big heavyweight fight at the top that has a lot of anticipation. But maybe this is the UFC's way of saying, like, hey, we're gonna give you a shit pay-per-view so that the numbers don't skyrocket, so you have zero negotiation power after this, Francis. But I don't know. There's some crazy tactics, you never know. But I think, you know, the Francis Gon fight, it's enough to get people watching and to pay that number, you know, the 75. But it's tough. I mean, you'd have to be a really diehard fan to have a lot of interest in the undercard and the different fights on the way up. You know, there's not like any really crazy storylines on any of those and a lot of hype behind any of those either. And it seems like more than less cards are like that these days, just because, you know, they're just putting on good fights and you have to really just appreciate good fights, because a lot of these guys who don't have star power or drawing power or anything like that, like, they still put on really exciting fights and you know, bring eyes to the sport. And I think, you know, fans appreciate that. But as far as money and numbers go, it doesn't really translate.
To play devil's advocate, this card has been kind of ravaged. Let's be honest. Just taking a look at it, Jared Cannonier, Derek Brunson was supposed to be on this card. Obviously got moved to the February card, which makes all the sense in the world because there's a middleweight title fight on it. Viviane Araújo, Alexa Grasso was supposed to be on this card. Bavzar Evloya versus Ilya Topuria was supposed to be on this card. So COVID took away that fight, but at least Topuria is still on the card fighting Charles Jourdain. So the card was better as like in the original status of said card, but yeah, it's not the greatest of all time, but those are some
interesting. I think Brian nailed it. I didn't even really think about it. I think they shortchanged this card to be like, yeah, screw you, Francis. You're not selling more than 500 on your name alone. We're not giving you any boost. I think he nailed it. That's it. That's totally it.
Could be quite possible, man.
Totally.
All right, Jed. What is it? What's the low-key banger?
Dude, it's not even close. This is the most obvious. It's like, I will say, the fight I'm the most interested in on the undercard, honestly, outside of the main two fights, is Ilya Topuria at Charles Jourdain. It would have, had that been Mavzar Evloev, that would have been like the fight I cared about the most. Like, I think those are two future top 10 guys. Incredible talent. And this is the fight I want. I think Charles Jourdain's still a really interesting test for Topuria. I think he's going to win pretty handily, but I want to see him style on one more dude before I put him in the top 10 of my rankings. And I think that we can see that. But if I'm just going pound for pound violence, it's Rowney Barcelos, Victor Henry. Casey says it all the time. I don't agree, but he's not far off. Bantamweight is one of the best divisions in the sport. Rowney Barcelos has had like four fight of the nights or whatever in his time. And Victor, I don't know, has Victor any fought in the UFC yet? I just remember him from Ryzen, where he was a banger. Like, in Ryzen, he did some really weird stuff. He has like he had an inverted triangle win there. Like, he's just a fun scrapper. Barcelos is probably going to run him. He's probably going to just rinse him. But for however long it lasts, it should be fun, scrambly, weird, compelling stuff. So that's easily my low-key banger of the weekend.
Victor Henry is actually, according to Tapology, the number one ranked bantamweight in all of Japan. How about that? So, yeah, he just beat a UFC vet, put him away in his last fight before getting the call, which is long overdue.
Be Masanori Kanahara, who, you know, a little old, but still a dude that's worthy of respect. Like, he was a fun guy in Ryzen, so... and Raoni Barcelos is like the definition of a fun dude. That guy he's never in a boring fight.
That should be a fun one. That is my choice as well. Brian, what is yours? What is your low-key banger?
He mentioned it first. Mine is the Jourdain and Ilia Topuria. You know, the original matchup was probably better with the undefeated, you know, guy putting the O on the line. But, I really like Jourdain. After that last fight, he showed a lot of fire against Yule and just – the way that he ended that fight, vicious with that push kick. I mean, he had a chip on his shoulder. That was some crazy stuff. And he had some intensity, man. And I think, you know, he could come in here and get an upset if he brings that same intensity. Because, you know, Topuria has been a real rising star. He has some nasty body shots. He's a finisher. And, you know, this is an interesting stylistic fight. You know, I think Jourdain is probably, you know, doesn't have as much power as Topuria, but he does throw a lot. He's highly skilled. He has really good kickboxing. And he mixes up trips and takedowns well and has a good jiu-jitsu game. So, yeah, I'm really really interested to see how that fight plays out. But that's probably my low-key banger right there.
That is a very interesting fight. It'll be and it's kind of a house money fight for Jourdain too. So if he can keep it on the feet, it's going to be interesting. But if Topuria gets him on the ground, could be a pretty rough night for Mr. Jourdain. So, all right, we have talked about all the topics here, and there's no actual battle. There's no winner or anything like that. And normally we'd have the knockout round and things of that nature. But I'm going to give each of you gentlemen 30, 45 seconds to just talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. If you want to talk about MMA, you want to say anything, just wax poetically about something. We'll give you the final word, if you will, on this roundtable edition. Jed, we begin with you. You are the interim champ, at least in your eyes. What would you like to say, MMA or whatever?
I would like to speak directly to Dana White. You and I don't see eye to eye on many things. I would just like to ask you to just do the things you say you do, because you make a big point of saying that the UFC is better than boxing because you make the fights fans want to see. You don't do that anymore. You make some good fights. I'm not here to say you don't, but the fans have pretty unanimously said, we'd like to see Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier fight, and we'd like to see Jon Jones and Francis Ngannou fight. And instead, you are not doing that almost – undeniably, because you are trying to affect your bottom line better. You are trying to get to positions you want. You'll make the Diaz Poirier fight if Diaz will re-sign, but if he only got one fight left, you're going to make sure you get it to be the Conor fight so they can't do it outside of your organization and make all that money themselves. Dude, just make the fights and move on. You've seen it enough times. Other people have come and gone. We're still going to watch your product. You're still going to overcharge us 75% a pop for it. Just make us the fights we want to see now so we don't risk losing them forever.
A standing ovation from the capacity crowd. Boom, what would you like to say?
You know, I'd like to speak directly to Dana White as well and just say, you know, you've done everything right and you treat us fighters great and you give us the platform and you might lie sometimes, but I think they're good lies. You know, they're lies to make us feel better. And you really, you know, you've built the sport, you've done great things for the sport, and you know, you've shown nothing but respect to us fighters. And I love the bump in the pay-per-views. Like, I want to pay more to watch the product because it's great. Like, the product is amazing, and I think it's perfect, matter of fact. And Nate Diaz, just, you know, letting that anticipate and just kind of build and not giving him fights when he wants fights. Like, it's probably a good business move. I really like what you're doing, and you know, bald recognizes bald. So, you know, just thank you for everything.
Brian wins. I know we didn't have a competition, but Brian wins.
Yes. Here's two things that stood out in my mind from this entire episode. One, there's a very active dog in somebody's house barking away. And two, someone needs to change the battery. Someone needs to change the battery on their smoke detector because I keep hearing it beep.
That's so both me. I lose.
Those are both them first. Because my subcontractors are disconnected.
My house is on fire, guys.
Safety first, then teamwork. Let's always remember that. But that's it. That is it, ladies and gentlemen. Boom. Thank you very much for jumping on, waxing poetically about MMA. Jed, always a pleasure. Hopefully we get to set up this championship match for you next week against Phoenix Carnivale. But we have a lot of fun stuff going on. No. Here at MMA Fighting, getting you ready for UFC 270. We got the press conference, 8 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss that. We also have the weigh-in show. First weigh-in show of 2022 going down. I think it's at 11 a.m. Maybe it's at noon. I'm not really sure. Just follow along. We'll let you know. We'll be live talking about that. We'll have a preview show. We'll have the ceremonial weigh-ins. We'll have the people's pre-fight show right before the main card's going to start. I'm not going to give you a time yet because who knows how many fights are going to actually be on this card on Saturday. And then Jose Youngs is in Anaheim. He'll have all the winner interviews after the bouts. We'll have the press conference, post-fight show. And then AK and I will be live Sunday morning. We're on to the next one. Good night, everybody. Thanks for watching.
This is Esther Lynn. Bye.
Take it easy, guys. Thanks.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.